We are joined right now by an NBA reporter for ESPN. Also, the pride of Fresno, Cali. Chris Haynes is my guest. Chris, good morning. What's going on? How are you?
Romy Rome. Thanks for having me, man. Always a pleasure.
My man. Good to have you back, Chris. Thanks so much. So Golden State has had an issue with slow starts in a number of the playoff games. What do you make of the way they came out and the way they started last night?
Well, I definitely think JaVale McGee has a large part to do with that. You know, when the Warriors were struggling in the first quarters of games during the second half of the season, Steve Kerr started to go to JaVale McGee a little bit more. Somebody who gives them an aerial assault, a lob presence, energy. He kind of gets that, you know, gets that team rolling. And, you know, the problem is with him, you can't depend on him for long stretches, usually. So that's when they start to kind of get in the funk. But, you know, look, I just think the Warriors as a whole, they understand the magnitude of the situation they're up against, and they want to make sure if they do get into get a massive lead in the series, which is 2-0 is pretty much commanding, they want to make sure they sustain it. Yeah, I was talking to Draymond in the locker room after the game, and he said, look, man, ain't nobody celebrating here right now. He said, we've been up 3-1. We've been down 3-1. We all know what happened a couple of years ago. So their point of emphasis is making sure they keep their foot on the gas.
Chris Haynes joining us, ESPN NBA reporter. And I'm glad you mentioned JaVale McGee. I love what he did last night. I mean, the guy barely played in the Western Conference Finals, but he keeps himself ready mentally, physically, and when called upon, he gets it done. Let's talk about Steph Curry for a minute. What do you make of what you saw from him, and what do you think of his performance last night?
It was epic. It was epic. I mean, a record, playoff record, 9 3-pointers. You know, he was that's a level of him that we haven't seen much of in the NBA Finals. If you think about all of his finals outcomes, they haven't been the Steph Curry that we've, you know, grown to see during the course of the regular season. And that's what has led to him to not being able to be in contention for that NBA Finals award. But what he did and the way he did it, it was just back-breaking threes, you know, pump fake threes, getting the defender up in the air, hitting the shot, getting Kevin Love to trip him and still knock it down the shot. And then the most memorable one was where he kind of dribbling around Kevin Love and loses the ball momentarily, falls back going backwards and hits a high arc and tray. Those type of threes right there, man, it just takes the confidence right out of the opposition. And he did that right now. That's Stephen Curry, and I know he's not the greatest player in the league, and he's probably not even the best player on his team. But the way that he plays and the way that he does things, it just takes the oxygen right out of a team. And that was Steph. That was what we're typically used to seeing in the regular season.
Yeah, I agree with you. Those are more than just dagger shots. Psychologically, those are crushing shots. I mean, when he's throwing them up from as far back as he was, when you got a hand in his face, psychologically, that's really damaging. At the end of the third quarter, Chris, he and Kendrick Perkins were jawing back and forth. What was that about, and what did Curry's teammates make of that situation?
Yeah, no, as soon as I went in the locker room, a bunch of players, you know, came up to me and asked me if I saw the replay. And I said, no, I thought Stephen Curry initially got upset about something Kendrick Perkins said, which led to them going face-to-face. But what happened was that they felt like Kendrick Perkins didn't move his feet and his legs, knowing that Curry was backing into that way. They felt like just out of respect, just being a decent person, that you would see somebody coming backwards, that you would move your feet. You don't want to get a sprained ankle or have a knee-to-knee contact. And that's what Stephen Curry on Kendrick Perkins about him. Perkins felt like he had the right to be there. That's his space. He didn't have any obligation to move, which is true. But that's how they felt. So they were very ticked off about Kendrick Perkins doing that. And it's funny because Kendrick Perkins hasn't played a second in this series, but yet he's been a mini storyline in each of these two games. You know, the first game he's getting into it with Draymond. Draymond's making fun of him with the pom-poms. So that was something that they were really ticked off on. The league is going to look into it, but I doubt anything comes out of it.
Hey, Chris, not only that, but he was a factor in the Toronto series when he got into it with Drake, too. I mean, so Perk's not even playing, yet he's a factor. Let me ask you this. Do the Warrior players think that maybe Perkins was looking to send a message to Steph by not moving his legs? Or do they think that maybe he was looking to hurt him?
Look, they feel it was a dangerous play. That's the way it was described to me. It was a dangerous play. he should have moved out the way, or he should have, you know, at least tried to, I guess, grab Steph to make sure that nothing serious happened. So they're not looking at it. He tried to hurt. They just think it was a dangerous play. And he's trying to – they feel like Perkins is basically trying to be an enforcer in street clothes. That's what Perkins has always been, an enforcer throughout his career. He's just trying to make an impact. But that's just one antic that they felt like was just unnecessary.
Chris Haynes joining us. All right, so the series shifts back to Cleveland now. And obviously the expectation is the Cavalier role players will shoot the ball better at home, so the offense might go up a notch. But defensively, is there anything that they can do that they haven't already tried? I mean, are there any more tools or tricks that they can try and use?
Jim, that's a tough call. You know, if I'm a coach, I'm in a tough spot right now. I think you just have to depend on being in the confines of your home and familiar territory, and hopefully that you get extra guys, J.R. Smith in particular, to step up and give LeBron James some aid. I think that's all it boils down to expect LeBron James to go for a 50-piece every game just to keep you in contention. I think that's too much to ask. I do think that crowd will help him. I think the role players will step up, and I expect it to be more competitive in Game 3 and Game 4. But, Jim, I don't know what they can do, man. I really don't. I asked LeBron about, just the odds being against them in this series, man. There's just too many weapons on the other side of the floor. And he said, look, the odds have been against me my whole life. This isn't nothing new. This is basketball. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, obviously we've seen LeBron come from huge deficits and overcome it, became victorious. So we'll see what he has left in store now.
Chris Haynes, my guest. Listen, you've spent a lot of time with that team. You covered that team. You spent a lot of time around LeBron. I mean, if you had to guess, where do you think he was like emotionally and mentally after playing the game that he played in Game 1 where he dropped that 50-piece on them? They had a chance to rip the home court. They had a chance to steal that one. And then to lose it the way they did, what do you think was going through his mind? And what do you think, where is he mentally right now?
Look, I think after Game 1, he was distraught. And you go inside the locker room, he was just staring into space while getting dressed. Didn't really want to have any conversations with anybody, any side conversations. That was a backbreaker. Game 2, he was in much more of a good mood. He was joking with reporters. He was a little bit more upbeat than I expected. I don't know if he's come to the realization that, hey, man, there ain't much more I can do, so why even pout? I don't know what it is, or maybe he feels like he's figured something out. But it was just definitely a contrast to how he felt after Game 1 to Game 2. Obviously, you know, losing the way they lost in that game in Game 1 and then just getting blown out. Players always say blowouts are easily to digest because you just move on and forget about it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to Game 3 for sure.
Chris Haynes joining me for another moment or two. You know, you mentioned Draymond. You've got this great Instagram pic from behind Draymond that showed the crush of media that was in his face, and all the fans see is the reverse angle with just the player. But how intimidating and overbearing can that crush be, and what do you make of how the players deal with it?
You know, it's not quite like what is it in the Super Bowl? It's media week,
media day.
They call it
media day.
Yeah. So it's not quite like that, but you know, you got media from all over the world here. And Draymond Green is one of the most polarizing guys because he says what's on his mind, and so it's just like for a player, you know, most players, Andre Iguodala, he would prefer to stay away from that type of setting. You know, a lot of players don't like that. But Draymond, he revels in that, man. You're like, that's his moment. That's his stage. He feels good about that. And, you know, just for media men in general, you know, it's intimidating and it's tough because you're trying to crowd and get a question in. And for most people, I'm going to put my own personal complaint in there, Jim. You know, most of those reporters ain't asking, not even asking any questions, but they want to get – front row seats to get a great picture or do whatever they have to do for the camera wise. But it's a big moment for a lot of people, and Draymond, he's definitely one of those guys who feels like, you know, this is his stage and he's going to relish in it.
Well, like you said, Chris, there's so much media there, so you're actually on a big stage yourself, which brings me to my last point. Your footwear has taken some heat over the years, most notably from Draymond at the parade a while back. How are your kicks these days, and have you stepped your game up?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I will definitely, just to avoid any type of confrontation, I would definitely probably wear some Nikes if the Warriors are to win the championship parade. I have my Damian Lillard threes on. I love those threes. They went well with my suit. But, players look at things like that. They'll look at what you're wearing at that typical time, and they'll give you some heat. Sometimes some players won't even talk to you unless you put on a pair of shoes that they're representing. So I'll make sure I come correct. I'll put that on myself, Jim. You know, I wasn't thinking properly. But if the Warriors indeed do win, or if the Cavaliers win, I definitely make sure I have some Nikes on.
Chris, you're so right. I mean, you were so right about that either. And they do watch, and secondarily, if they don't like what they see, they will either tell you or they won't give you the time of day. So they are paying attention. We know this. He's an ESPN NBA reporter. He is the pride of Fresno, and I know he's upgraded his kicks. My man, Chris, great to have you back. Thank you so much. Great having you on.
Jim, thank you as always. Take care, my guy.
Thanks for making time for us, Chris. Appreciate you. Chris Haynes joining us to talk about the NBA Finals. He says he's looking forward to Game 3. So, look, we know what's going to happen to a certain extent. We know the Cavaliers will show up differently at home. We know exactly what we're going to get from LeBron, and the guys that he's got to run with are going to shoot the ball better at home. We know the role players will play better. Is it going to be enough? Essentially, it comes down to Golden State, not Cleveland.